Hey everybody, just to give you a heads up on this week's podcast. It's a long time since I've done one of these pre-show ambles, so you know something's gone bad if I'm here. The episode you're about to listen to, a very interesting one, with just Joe and myself, where we may come off very negative, but it's negative from a place of intense love, so keep that in mind when we moan for about 2 hours. We did have some technical issues in the first 15 minutes or so, so it might sound as if there's a slight delay or lag between Joe and myself. My microphone is sounding weird as well for some reason, but it does clear itself up after about 15 minutes. We did do some troubleshooting, we got it taken care of, so don't worry about that. And I've tried to do as much in the edit as I could to kind of lessen the lag, and or bits where we talked over each other because of the lag, I've removed one of our voices and stuff like that. So I've tried to clean it up as much as I can. The result is what you'll get, and hopefully you'll think, if he didn't even say it at the start, I wouldn't have even noticed that anything was wrong. But I know it. I'm like your man in Monty Python with the dirty fork. I saw it. I noticed. And one day I will end up stabbing myself to death with a fork over the audio quality of this podcast. But anyway, it should all be good now. Again, enjoy our talk on the state of collision. And also, as a little treat, Joe and I saw the same movie this week, and we don't feel the same way about it. And that's always a fun time when those kind of, it's not quite The Raid and The Raid 2, but when those discussions come up, I always find those are fun as well. So anyway, I will leave you go now. Enjoy the episode, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Chair Shot Podcast. We're back once again, talking everything from wrestling to popular culture to music, TV, and our lives. Barry is not with us this week as he is at Croke Park in Dublin, seeing the Bruce Springsteen concert. So I hope he enjoys that. I hope he's bloody rocking out to the boss, because you know, what the boss is like. He never lets you down. He'll be doing like dancing in the dark. He'll be doing all the hits. He's not doing new stuff, is he? To be fair. So
does he have new stuff?
I'll say yes. I'm going to say he's still putting out albums.
I'm going to say the last non-best of release he brought out was probably in 1987.
No, I'll go 2018. Okay, I'm going to look it up now.
No, Bruce Springsteen. I'm being facetious. You're probably right.
No. That was completely serious. And so now I'm going to double check. 2022. He had a new album out.
But how many songs off do you know?
It's a cover album, to be fair. So I'll let you count. I don't recognize any of these songs though. Night Shift was.
Isn't that annoying when people put out cover records and it's all like, this is a cover of an old Geppetto Jimenstein record from the 1950s, yeah. Going all the way back.
It looks like a lot of good kind of Motown R&B songs, but I don't recognize any of them. Turn Back the Hands of Time by Tyrone Davis. Yes, we are back, and we're gonna jump straight into a bit of. Stop me if you remember, if you've been listening long enough to remember this feature. Paulie Griff Boys and Townie Boy on Footy Radio.
Oh, baby.
Remember that one?
When was that? How long ago was that?
Oh, it must have been like...
That was early days.
That was quite early. 2011, 2012, sort of, yeah, first, because not the first year, but a couple of...
I know we years. One of the episodes we talked about Dimitar Berbatov, so he was still on the go.
Oh, that was, yeah, that must have been 2011.
Dimmy Burbo. So I just have an important news item, guys, before we get into the footy, right? I spoke about this last year. So it's going to be a payoff to a setup a year ago for listeners who are, you know, we talk about long-term storytelling in the wrestling business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So last year, my brother and I do an annual Fantasy Premier League mini league with just the two of us in. And last year, I bought an AEW World Championship toy replica to signify the winner of the Fantasy Premier League mini league between me and my brother. And last year, he set the all-time record between the two of us with a 2,472.
Pretty good, pretty good.
So I was struggling. But this year, I was avowed to come back and claim the championship for my own. And I am happy to report. And RFPL world champion. He's got the belt, ladies and gentlemen. Right here. It's not got any nameplates on it, but
finish the story.
The story is finished. I beat him by about 100 points, thank God.
Nice.
Made one final change going into game week 38. Brought in Mateta. He only gets a bloody hat trick, doesn't he? And an assist. Push me over the line.
I bet when your brother saw that, he was going, "Oh, Mateta."
Well, actually, we do have a Mateta in joke in the family, which we're actually between us fighting over. It's a separate title, fighting over who's going to get to use the pun title in next season's name your team for your fantasy team. Right? It's a deep cut, but it's an Austin Powers reference. Oh, do you like Mateta? So that's the joke. But I brought him in. He did the goods. So now I'm the proud owner of this belt, what I bought over a year ago. Now I can finally say,
very nice.
I've earned it. I have my own Swerve Strickland moment. I will say, compared to what we used to get, Joe, as children, I'm sure you had maybe one of the old WWF toy replica belts with the very foam feeling.
Yeah.
Strap. I had two. I had the WWF title and I had the Smoking Skull version as well. I will say the quality is as you can see, is somewhat improved. The listeners will have to take my word for it. It's quite a shiny belt.
Yeah.
It's also got a faux leather strap. It's not the foam what's it anymore. And you've got a little Velcro.
Oh.
A little Velcro gimmick there. Chuck so it there, up, there's yeah. your... There's your there's your belt in there.
Wear that later, Wembley this summer.
Big dirty mark.
Yeah. Ooh, trust me, this cost $8,000. I think it legitimately was €15 or something.
Not bad.
So very happy to have gained that. As far as the football went, a little bit anticlimactic. We had again this year the TV, laptop, iPad triple match setup as we did last year. Last year's was a little bit more exciting with the Aston Villa going 2-0 in front against Manchester City.
Here
City just scored immediately.
And then West Ham are shit anyway, so you kind of knew.
There was like a 20-minute period after West Ham scored where it might have been artificial, but there was a little, ooh. But
I did think that as well. I was actually out today because my mum had bought tickets to a show that I'll discuss later. The show started at 2:30. And so we kind of finished around halftime. So then we're like on the way back on the train, I'm like checking the scores, West Ham have scored. But when I checked the halftime scores, I was like, oh, maybe City will be losing. Or maybe it's a draw. And then I looked, it was 2-0. I was like, didn't miss anything.
Yeah. I mean, it was a pretty straightforward Man City win. West Ham didn't put up much opposition. They scored a great goal. The goal was a cracking overhead kick from Mohamed Kudus, one-time Paul Griffin FPL legend. But otherwise, City were just handling them. It could have been 4-5 by halftime. Arsenal, on the other hand, really struggled against Everton to break them down.
Everton are good.
And ultimately got a winner.
Solid.
A disputed winner because there was a handball involved.
Yeah, I was kind of glad he overturned it. I was almost like,
Well, it didn't get over. The goal,
I mean, not overturned, but yeah. they sent him to the screen, and normally they go, oh, yeah, it's a handball. But he went against their advice. And,
well, it's good to see a referee with some agency.
Especially the one that, like, because you know they're going to devote whether to get rid of VAR next season.
Yeah.
I was wondering if Michael Oliver was like, ah, fuck it, they're getting rid of it anyway. I'll just get it. Like, one last, like, fuck it, you know.
And I did like that it was Wolves who have suggested this change, who had a player sent off today via a VAR review. 100% red card, by the way.
Yeah.
Absolutely red card. But not the most exciting. I did also watch the Manchester United Brighton game. Good win for the boys. Eighth placed finish, the worst
in the Premier League era
since I've started watching, at least.
Only second
to the David Moyes seventh place of 2013-14. But I do feel like the circumstance and the context are important to remember with regards to I've never seen a season like this injury-wise. Granted, there are other problems, but I mean, not being able to put out the same defensive back line more than, like, what was, did I hear something like the most we had played two players together was like Johnny Evans and Varane, and they had played six games. And that was like our most common defensive.
It was a bit of a nightmare. But then I feel Ten Hag made zero adjustments to like account for that. Like, he kind of just played, like, we were just completely open in the middle of the park and just shots. Like, if you're struggling in defense, then surely you make like a tactical shift.
Yeah, well, I feel like more recently the issue especially was putting Casemiro into center back. Was number one, he's not a great centre back, and number two, that also subtracts some strength from the midfield. Because who are you putting in the midfield then? Eriksen, who's absolutely cooked.
And Fred.
Remember him?
Fred. Yeah, exactly. We don't have any good central midfielders or central defenders or strike. No, I think Hoyland's a decent, like, young prospect, a
decent buy,
and I think Martinez, when he's fit, has been good. But we like, through the spine of the team, it's a centre back, a central midfielder, and a top striker. Yeah. Like, I think if we had those three, I actually think you look at like Mainoo, Ahmad, Garnacho. Like, there's some exciting players in there. Fernandez usually, you know, often delivers. Well,
there's definitely too much of a reliance on young players who are going to be inherently inconsistent as well. You know, who you might argue that they've over-delivered in that respect. But Mason Mount, like, what a dud signing that was. What, did he play five games?
Yeah, but I think he's a decent player.
Yeah, this is the argument I had with somebody the week about Varane. I think Varane's excellent. But he only plays half the games, though. I'd rather have a worse player who can play every game.
Yeah. But I think Varane was bad. But similar to Casemiro, like, never sign a player from Real Madrid. Because they will only sell players once they're worthless.
Once they're cooked, right.
They've still got, like, Modric and Toni Kroos playing, even though they're, like, 40, because they're still good.
No,
so
I think
they're selling him.
The strategy is to buy young. Not like, super
young.
You want to bring in a 23, 24-year-old center mid who's going into the prime years, not someone who's had their prime and is on the come down.
You need, like, a Declan Rice to Arsenal. That's the kind of transfer we would have done in the past. Or I think we would have got Harry Kane before. I think we would have just signed all the Tottenhams. We'd have signed Kane, Son, probably a few others from Spurs.
Yeah,
Fergie would have just gone there and said, look, fuck off, Spurs. We're going to take all your best players. Because you don't want to be in the Champions League anyway, so we're just going to take all your best players.
Yeah.
And we'd have had a decent squad. But
we didn't do a FP. Do you know the way we usually do a Premier League, like, predictions game? Did we do one this season? I don't remember if we did it.
I think we did.
Oh, we did. I have it here. Okay, let me pull it up. Because now the season's over, so we can reveal. Let me pull up this is an impromptu segment, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing the Premier League prediction results here. Although, we don't have yet the Champions League or FA Cup winners, but we can put a little asterisk next to those. Let's look at the final table. So, it's between you, me, and Barry. I predicted as my top four In number one position, Manchester City. Number two, Arsenal. Ding, ding, ding. Three, Newcastle, and four, Man United. So that's 2 points for me. So I'm going to put 1 point there, 1 point there. Joe, you said number one, Manchester City. Number two, Liverpool. Actually, what I'll do is I'll put 2 points for an exact correct placement and one point for if you put them in the right section. So I'll give you 1 point for Liverpool, 1 point for Arsenal, and zero for Man United. Because you had Arsenal and Liverpool in the top four, but in the wrong position. Parry had at number one, Revenge. Number two, Spider-Man. Number three, TCM. And number four, Collateral. So no points for Parry. Five through eight, I had Liverpool at number five, so no point there. I had Chelsea in sixth, which was exactly correct. Aston Villa seventh, so nothing. And Spurs in eighth, so nothing there. Joe had Newcastle in fifth, 1 point. Brighton in sixth, so nothing there. Tottenham Hotspur in seventh, so 1 point. And Chelsea in eighth, so 1 point there as well. And Barry had Chelsea, 1 point. Arsenal, nothing. Spurs, 1 point. And the U.S. men's national team, so nothing there. Relegation. I went with Wolves. Wolves finished in 14th place. 20 points clear of relegation. Luton, so 2 points for that. And Sheffield United, so 2 points for that. Joe, you said Luton also, 2 points.
Yeah.
Everton, who finished in 15th. And Fulham, who finished in 13th, so no points there. And Barry said Fulham four times, which was incorrect. Second top scorer. So the second top scorer in the league, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was Cole Palmer. So I said Isak, which was wrong. You said Mohamed Salah, which was wrong. I feel like he's coming to the end of his career as well. United will probably sign him. Mm-hmm. And Barry said anyway, Haaland, which was not also not correct. Now here we go. Player of the year. Oof. With the asterisk of you cannot pick Kevin De Bruyne as he always win it. Joe, you said Saka. No points. Barry said Edge. The wrestler.
No, that was him.
Or the U2 guitarist. Paul said Phil Foden. For a big two-pointer there. And now we come to the overachievers and underachievers, and obviously those are always subject to a little bit of subjectivity. Paul's overachievers were Aston Villa. I'm going to give 2 points on that one. Joe said Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace finished in 10th. I would say that since they brought in their new manager, I'm going to give you the points on that one.
I think that's thank you. I think that 10th is pretty good for them.
Yeah, I mean, they were looking real bad when Hodgson was still there. And this new fellow has done a great job. Barry says NXT. No, I'm not going to give any points for that one. Underachievers. Paul says Fulham. I don't know if I would necessarily say that I think they finished more or less. Where you'd imagine. Joe says Bournemouth. Again, they finished above Fulham, in fact. So I would lean to say no on that one. And Barry said AEW, so I'm going to give Barry 2 points on that one. FA Cup winners, we obviously don't know, but I said Liverpool and you said Arsenal. So those are nothing there. Barry said Manchester City, so potential.
That's 2 points for Barry.
For him. Mm-hmm. Carabao Cup. Now, the Carabao Cup winners were Liverpool, of course. Cool. I said Chelsea. Joe said Brighton. And Barry said Scunthorpe United. Nothing doing there. And then also Champions League, I said Bayern Munich, very close semifinals. Joe said Barcelona. Good. Barry says Inter Milan. So points wise, I finish on 14 points. Joe 11 and Barry 6. So there you go. The Phil Foden and Aston Villa predictions getting me over the line there. Happy with us. Anyway, otherwise, not much happened. I mean, the relegation battle was kind of finished already. Luton needed a 15-goal swing or something to stay up. That wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, Forest won.
Forest won, anyway. And I mean, the top eight more or less all stayed in the same position, right? Nobody went up, nobody moved down.
No, all the same.
All the same.
I think my highlight of the season, probably Jurgen Klopp leaving Liverpool. And then him hiring some baldy Dutch man who's with a worse track record than Erik ten Hag had before he came from Ajax. Ooh, I think
Liverpool are in they feel to me like they're almost in the Ferguson leaving United era where, you know, when Ferguson left, you still had, you know, your Van Persie, Evans, like a lot of players who were, and then players who just weren't that good in the first place, your Cleverley and Anderson in midfield, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's important that this slot, Arne's slot, gets to rebuilding quickly, because I feel like a lot of this team are going to be worse under a different manager.
Yeah.
And some of the players, I'm going to point out, especially Salah, despite having a very good first half of the season, are running out of fumes, it looks like to me.
Yeah, Salah, I think, could even leave in the summer, or maybe one more year, but I think he's...
I think Salah will go.
A really good return.
Yeah, I feel like Salah's success was condensed to one little part of the season. And in the last half, he didn't really contribute much.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I think it's interesting. And I think it'll be interesting when City leaves, when Guardiola leaves City, maybe next season. He's already been there far longer than he normally says. We just see how these teams rebuild. Liverpool have players, a lot of players who have good, arguable good potential. I mean, Nunez is there 2 years now. You're kind of waiting for him to come good.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. And Arsenal, I mean, God, I was really hoping Arsenal were going to do it today, because I think I've said before, Arsenal to win the league, to me, feels very like it gives hope to teams like United and Spurs, because Arsenal were only a few years ago in the position we're in, you know? So that's the football talk, Joe, unless you have any last points on that.
Yeah. So what else have you been up to this week other than the footy? Anything else going on?
Well, actually, I have one more footy talk section.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Update. So the Europa League final is on Wednesday in Dublin's Aviva Stadium.
Ah, yes.
And there was a lottery you could sign up for to get tickets. And I signed up to win the lottery to buy tickets. I signed up, and so did my brother, to no avail, sadly. And then I did get the email today to say, oh, you know, people who had signed up to lottery and won, they didn't all necessarily buy tickets.
Yeah.
So now tickets are on sale. So maybe I could go and spend some money on tickets and go to the Europa final and watch Bayer Leverkusen, you know, finish the story maybe. Except I don't need to buy tickets because our friend Marcus Smith is coming over and offered some little free ticket to your boy.
Oh.
To attend the Europa League final in Dublin.
Oh, the one that the Villa didn't make.
Oh, Villa. Don't have a go. Yeah. Overachievers of the year. They did lose 5-0 today as well. Don't say that out loud. I won't mention
mention they lost 5-0 to Crystal Palace.
No, that might have him reconsidering his choices. But I'll be going to the Europa League final, so I'll have a report on that next time we talk. And see if Leverkusen can go the whole season unbeaten and maybe witness a little bit of history as well.
Yeah, I hope they lose.
You don't think so?
Oh, no, they'll probably win it, but I want them to lose.
No! Why?
I don't like Xavi Alonso.
Oh, fair enough.
Liverpool in it.
Oh, true. Okay, otherwise, I was playing a bit of golf yesterday.
Nice.
I'm afraid to tell you, though, I won't be going on the PGA Tour.
Oh, why? You object to the Saudi Arabian investment? Or?
That and very was not very good.
What's your handicap?
An inability to play golf. well, I played. We went to the local little dinky par three golf course. I.e., you know, baby mode, simple little. You're not hitting the 500 yards. Little dinky golf course, and I got around in 81, which was 85, not even 81. Oof. So if I do a little calculator gimmick here, so 3 times 18 give you your par 54. So I was like 31 over par. But it were a lovely day, and it was fun to get out and be out in the sun and hit a few golf balls, right? Although I was wearing my nice chino shorts.
Ooh,
because I wanted to look like a real golf man. But then when I was looking for a ball, I got stung up. My nettle stung me all up the leg. Which I wasn't happy about. But look, you make hay when the what's that saying? You make hay when the sun shines.
Yeah, play golf when the sun shines. Quite literally.
Yes. Yeah. I still have a little mark on the back of my leg where it's stung. Very, very bad. How was your week? Enjoying the weather?
Yeah. It's been better. I'm still trying to finish off this shed in the garden.
Oh, yes.
It looks sort of good, and I thought it was going to be good. It's just so flimsy. Like, it's a plastic shed, which is kind of good for, like, waterproof, and it's not going to, like, age like wood. But it's so flimsy, I have to, like, push it to one side to get the door open. Because the bases on isn't perfectly flat. Like, it's very flat, but it's not, like, perfectly flat. So I think that means it leans to one side slightly. Anyway, the good news is the only stuff we're putting in there is, like, suitcases and Christmas decorations. So stuff we're not going to get out more than once a year. So I don't have to, like, be going in and out every week. So that's the handy thing. But, other than that, good. Bit of sun, went to the movies on Saturday, and a bit of culture today. All good. Wrestling news? Do you want to dive into that?
Wrestling news, a ton of injury news.
A lot of injuries. Eddie Kingston, who's due to be in the Anarchy in the Arena match at Double or Nothing, has been, I didn't hear the injury because I don't read wrestling news anymore, but what was the,
broke his leg. Cause?
Really?
Yeah, fractured tibia on the New Japan.
Oh, fuck.
I forget what show it was called, but he was wrestling Gabe Kidd in a title match for the New Japan Strong Championship, which he's now lost as well. So all his titles are now gone.
Yeah.
But he took a suplex off the ring apron through a table on the outside. But unfortunately, his legs, as he was swinging over, collided with the crowd barricade.
Shit.
Apparently he suffered a fracture to his leg. So
that's a shame.
Unfortunate for him. He was replaced by the equally injured Darby Allin in the match.
I was thinking he got hit by a bus. So
yeah.
How injured is Eddie Kingston that he's getting replaced with Darby Allin?
Yeah, how bad is the injury if your ringer is someone who was just hit by a bus?
And broke his foot like 8 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that the Anarchy in the Arena match is such that you can get away with doing less in the sense of it's not a classic wrestling match. It can be a walk and brawl, and Darby doesn't need to do much more than that. He will, because that's who he is. But Eddie Kingston might have struggled. I mean, his leg's broken. He would have struggled to do muchness, but... Darby, I would say, would probably be fine in the way that Chuck Taylor was fine to do his backstage brawl with Trent. So nice surprise. I did enjoy at the end of Dynamite when Darby came out with his really cool pink jacket. And I appreciate the attention to detail of he still had like the bandage on his nose, but he had painted his face paint on it.
Nice.
Which I liked. Also, related to the same match, Bryan Danielson comments came out today where he mentioned that he's potentially in need of surgery due to a painful radiation of pain, let's say, down to his right arm. and that he potentially, he has some compressed nerves that he potentially will require surgery for. So that ain't good, because we need to have Bryan Danielson wrestling in Wembley Stadium in August. So Tony, wrap this fellow up in cotton wool, please. As excited as I am for Dynamite's match with Satnam Singh, I don't need to see him having like tag team matches with the Righteous anymore, right? That doesn't do anything for anybody.
Why is he wrestling like that? Give him this Satnam match. That needs to be like one of the late Hogan Andre matches where they just lean on the ropes for 15 minutes and finish it with a bear hug. Just do that. And yeah, I don't want him doing anything at Anarchy in the Arena as well. Have him just wander around with a fire extinguisher and something like that.
See, I think there's something to be said about like Brian's last run having these like great matches as he has been having with your Osprey, your Swerves. But then also he's like wrestling a lot of these matches that just seem to be like busy work or like filler stuff. Yeah,
six-man tags and fucking...
Like six-man tags are six-man tags, but like we don't need to be seeing him have six-man tags at all.
I know, he should be having just big... I mean, I know Brian also just wants to wrestle. Like, he loves wrestling. He wants to...
But then, like...
Get out there, but Tony, okay. Put your foot down, son.
But if the argument is, look, he just wants to wrestle, then at least have him do matches that are of interest. Like, I could probably think of 10 matches he's not had and likely won't have before he finishes up.
Yeah.
That he could have instead of doing matches with the Righteous, you know?
I mean, he's still going to wrestle. He said he'd wrestle like six times a year or something.
Oh, of course.
So, you know, it's not... Yeah, he can still have all the dream matches, but... Well, I hope he's at Wembley. I'd be really disappointed if he's out of
that. Yeah, but like, keep in mind that this is a guy who's already retired through injury.
Yeah.
You know? So...
Well, so did Adam Copeland for 10 years, and now he's having two matches a week. Every other week.
Yeah, that's true. Well, for how long? And then the other... newsworthy point this week was related to Ricky Starks was interviewed and he's like, I don't know why I'm not on TV.
It's because your mates with Cody Rhodes, that's why.
Yeah, it's an interesting case, the old Ricky Starks thing, because I think there's something there with Ricky Starks, but I also feel like he's been given a lot of chances and has for the most part done well with those chances, but they never seem to sustain. And I feel like that's mostly AEW's fault, but I also feel like he has to be partially responsible, because when you look at a case study like Swerve, who just got so over that they couldn't deny and couldn't do anything but put him into the main event, I feel like Ricky Starks never quite connected in the same way. He's a good promo. He's got good matches. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a great, potential, like, excellent upper mid to top of the card guy. But I don't know, what is it that he just hasn't connected in the same way, where some of these guys they really double down on and push to the moon, and guys like Ricky Starks for whatever reason don't. I mean, I did see people and I thought it was funny, people in the week pointing towards that one. Like, the last time we really saw him in a prominent position was that promo he did with Adam Copeland, where they awkwardly insulted each other.
Right.
And if we want to get our tinfoil hats on, we might consider how much pull Adam Copeland has in regards to pulling Tony Khan aside and saying, look, I'm not working with that guy.
This guy's not got it. I don't know about that. I think it's always been the case with him, where he's kind of got that push and then it's not gone. I don't know. I do think there is something in the fact that I don't know how long his contract has to run, but he's very much a Cody guy and could go.
Yeah,
to WWE.
Do you think it's kind of like, okay, let's say his contract runs out this week, or let's say his contract runs out this year, whether Tony's just saying, well, maybe since that's the case, and maybe Ricky Starks has intimated to him in some way that he's likely going to leave, or let's say, again, this is all speculation. Let's say he's refused a contract extension.
Yeah.
Is Tony just saying, well, then it's not worth putting time into a guy who isn't going to be around? And anyway, as we've pointed out, hasn't really ever gotten to that next level anyway in terms of getting themselves over.
Yeah, exactly. And he's been burnt with Jade Cargill, with seeing Cody and Punk go there as well. And I think maybe he's thinking, well, look,
it does feel inevitable to me that he will go.
I think he will. And I think there's definitely room for him there to do very well. Assuming they put him on the main roster, I could see him even going to NXT.
Is it just a little bit of the classic wrestling booking strategy of when someone's moving out of the territory, you don't make them look strong?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
A shame, because as we said, I think he's got something to him, but I don't know what it is. Every time, I mean, you could point to like 3 or 4 pushes he's received, and he's done well with them, like the MJF match, the Punk, the Danielson, the latest tag team title run. And like, what does he ever have to show for, you know, at the end of those feuds? What does he have to show for it? Often nothing, you know?
Yeah.
A shame. But that is your wrestling news for the week. We do have a quiz, Joe, if you want.
Oh, I'd love to do a quiz.
You're playing on your own, though, this week.
Oh, I love playing by myself. What?
Well, you phrased that very well, playing.
You phrased that in a very interesting fashion. Why would you say it like that? That's weird. Ooh, anyway. Quiz.
So I was putting together a quiz today, and my initial thought was we'll do a pointless quiz.
Mm.
And then I had just a total like brain blank my brain couldn't make the quiz. I came up with one category, and I must have been sitting there for 10 minutes, and I just couldn't come up with anything. So I have fallen back on an old classic.
Oh, yeah.
So we're doing Dwayne Johnson Busters.
Yeah, baby!
We're doing Dwayne Johnson Busters. Now, you are a strong Dwayne Johnson Busters player anyway.
You know, I'm a former Rock Busters winner, former Dwayne Johnson Busters winner, former Soccer Busters winner. So,
yeah,
let's do it.
Okay. I do have 10. I don't know if we necessarily need to do 10 today. That might be a little bit much. Maybe
5 this week and save 5 for Barry.
Yeah.
And then
we can do that. I will give you a hint, though. These are all people who have had more than or equal to 3 televised AEW matches this year.
Oh.
So everyone on this list has had 3 or more televised matches this year in AEW.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I don't remember what the answer to this one is, do I? Oh, I do. Okay.
So I'm gonna do a stopwatch, and maybe me and Barry will go like head to head. Okay. So you can get them.
That would be an interesting way to do it.
As soon as you start reading the clue, I'm gonna press go. Okay.
Okay. Number one. If you like, destroy that evil spellcaster, like make her not alive anymore. What's that?
Dead witch? Like kill switch.
Kill switch is correct. 1 point.
Yes.
Number two, if you go to eat at Salt Bay's restaurant, you might end up with one of these.
Salty plate or salty...
Salt Bay. You know who Salt Bay is?
Yeah. Salt Bay. Sorry, say it again. You might end up with one of these.
So if you go to eat at Salt Bay's restaurant, you might end up with one of these.
Gold steak. I don't know. I'm going to need the initials.
No. Do you need an initial? The initial BB.
Bronson Boulder. Bear Bronson.
No. That restaurant, Joe, is a little bit expensive.
Big Bill. Oh, Big Bill.
Big Bill is correct.
I would never have got that just from
a Big Bill. That thing you use for clearing up leaves and that in the garden is just like fed up of it all.
Oh, fuck, what's his name? Drake, but was I don't know, is it what's the guy's name? Give me the initials. I might get it.
The initials JD.
JD?
Which
J Drake?
It is JD Drake. That's correct.
Jaded Drake.
Oh, okay. Jaded Drake. Got it. Yeah. JD Drake is correct. So two more. Number four. The priest can't because he's sort of like not important enough.
The priest. So what could that be? Father? Reverend?
The priest can't because he's not like important enough. So if the priest can't.
Priest can. Roosh. No, give me the initials.
BK. What's like more important than a priest?
Bishop. Oh, Bishop Khan.
Bishop Khan. Very good. He got it. And then the final one, number five. My friend likes to chomp on those, like, what do you call them, protective things around the ring. What's that?
The apron or turnbuckle, Chewbacca.
The protective things on the outside of the ring, I should say.
Okay. So,
my friend likes Matt. To chomp on those.
Matt.
You want the initials?
Matt. No, I think I can get it. Matt Nibble. No, go on.
Matt Nibble used to team with Randy Orton, didn't he? The initials are BM.
Bite Matthews? Bite Matt?
My friend.
Oh, Buddy Matthews. Buddy Matthews.
Buddy Matthews.
If it's Buddy Matthews, we're never doing this again.
We will be doing it next week. So Buddy Matthews is right. So those are your five answers, Joe. Kills Witch, Jaded Rake, God. Bishop Khan, Big Bill, and Buddy Matthews. What was your time?
4 minutes and 8 seconds.
4 minutes and 8 seconds. Very good. Very good. That's obviously a little bit open to interpretation, given how much time we spend rambling about the clues.
Rambling, whether you get the initial straight away or not.
But we'll see how Barry does. I'll save the other five for next week.
We won't tell him how I did. Just let him do it slowly.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way he could possibly find out how you did for a week.
He will not listen. He'll listen to the intro and go, oh, great show, lads.
I love it. Here's a lawyer. Oh, I love
golf and that. Eddie King. Oh, yeah, brilliant.
So we move on to the TV. Joe, what did you make of Dynamite and Collision this week? Did you watch both?
I didn't watch Dynamite. I haven't watched it for a few weeks, but I have watched Collision. I have watched Collision the last 2 weeks.
You are doing it backwards, my friend.
I've gone backwards, and I think maybe it's just because Collision. Because it's on a Saturday, I can wake up on a Sunday and watch it sort of fresh without getting any spoilers.
That is fair.
And so I do enjoy. And also the cards have been pretty good for Collision the last couple of weeks. There's been some enticing.
I had a big issue with this week's Collision and Rampage card.
What did
big
you like
issue? Okay, let's do an impromptu game. Have you seen this week's Collision, Joe?
Yeah, watched all of Collision.
Okay. Imagine for a second that you hadn't. Okay?
Okay.
Let me run through the card, Joe, and tell me if you... So again, cast out of your mind the fact that you already watched this. Let's pretend that this was... For some reason, Joe, I don't know why, they're doing the same card next week, okay? I'm going to read you the card, Joe. Can you tell me if you can predict who's going to win the match? Will Ospreay, Shane Taylor?
Will Ospreay.
Any ambiguity there about who's going to win? No, Ospreay.
Not.
Hook and Johnny TV.
Probably Hook.
Yeah, Katsuyori Shibata, Rocky Romero.
Brian Keith against Boulder, Orange Cassidy against Isaiah Cassidy, Serena Deeb, Anna Jay, Nick Wayne, Jack Carr. You see where I'm going here? Brian Danielson and FTR against Lance Archer and The Righteous.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no, I mean, we talked about this last week, but there's no lower, mid to lower card guy who will ever beat someone above them in the pecking order. And this was especially, we talked about last week, the problem with, like, Trent Beretta turns on Chuck Taylor and the Best Friends and should be getting this, like, this push, right? Has the match with Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy just beats him. It's like, Collision just seems to be, for all intents and purposes, okay, if you were to take a list of the AEW roster, you might even go over to chairshotpodcast.com where we have a list of literally how the roster is organized by wins, their win-loss record. If you were to draw a line from about the 20-point mark and plucked a card from people above the line and people below the line, nobody below the line will ever beat anybody above the line. And that's an issue, right? Yeah. I mean, we talk about 50-50 booking and how you want to avoid that, and that's fair. But, like, before Collision, I was looking at this card going, I know in advance, just by looking at the card, who's going to win every match. There was no ambiguity whatsoever. And so what's the point of watching it?
Yeah, you're right. And there's always a problem with people like Trent and a lot of these others. And you've seen it with, like, Hook and Ricky Starks to some extent, as we mentioned earlier, where they're kind of not going to be like a champion or a top guy. So then kind of what do you do with them if they're not having wins? And I think the problem with AEW, that what they don't do well, they've never really done well, is just have those, like, emotionally charged feuds that aren't about being at the top of the card. Like, you could still have a really good, like, I don't know, Ricky Starks versus Roosh, or Trent Beretta versus someone. Like, you can make it very heated and a grudge match without it being necessarily about them climbing up the card. You know what I mean? Because they've got too many guys who are sort of good but who aren't going to be up there. And it's just like, what do you do with them to keep them interesting?
You're right. They have an upper card and they have a lower card, and they don't really have a mid card. You know, they don't have upper mid carders and they don't have lower mid carders. Well, I mean, they do to an extent, but they have, like, again, you could argue that Hook and Jericho and that whole storyline is kind of an example of what you just mentioned, right? Except they never mix it up with other people in that same area. Hook will only beat people further down. And so there's not a organic mixture of people of different levels of the card. It's always, this seems like more of a problem with Collision than Dynamite, but it's always just a series of matches where it's one guy high up the card, or there's one guy low down the card. And so it feels like, you know, for the last 3 or 4 weeks, Collision has good matches, but there's never a question in your mind about the result. And that, for me, takes away the point of the show, almost. I appreciate that's not just another Dynamite. It's not like Raw and SmackDown back in the day where they were both the same show for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. It has a different identity to it, but I feel like it's got further and further away from the identity of having, you know, Dynamite was like the story heavy show, and Collision was where you get the really good matches. But now Collision to me just feels like a very long Rampage. Not that the people who are on it aren't important, but it's like squash matches. It feels like, you know, late 80s, early 90s WWF, where TV was just squash matches, and then the pay-per-view was where you got your, you know, the wrestlers actually wrestling each other. And that was fine for the time, but when the TV became the focus and where the money was in terms of TV rights, then that framework doesn't work as well as a viewer, find interesting.
I agree, and I think that's where, if you look at historically, like WWE and, you know, TNA with their kind of, you know, 2-hour weekly show, with WCW back in the day, it became a lot more storyline and promo driven rather than just matches. And I think that was for a reason, because, as you say, You can't put on an unpredictable top matches every week, right? It's just not possible. You're not going to have enough of those matches, and you need to save them for the big shows. But at the same time, AEW is very focused on in-ring action. There's very little backstage or kind of long in-ring promos. So you have to fill 5 hours a week with matches, because that's Tony's philosophy, that he wants in-ring. But then how do you make those matches compelling? Like, what's the...
I think one thing they're doing this week on Dynamite, which I think is interesting, is they're doing like a tag match of, is it Orange Cassidy and Ospreay against Trent and Roderick Strong?
Yeah.
And that feels like, okay, there's a match that I don't know who the winner is going to be, because they're kind of mixing the feuds. And that's one thing AEW does as well, is they keep the feuds very separate from each other.
That is true. Yeah, I was looking at that match thinking, am I going to get any points from that? Or am I going to get a big zero?
You got enough points.
I'm like, I don't know, actually. I don't think the faces should win. But on the other hand, I don't think Ospreay should be on the losing side, even if it's a tag match. So I am a little bit...
But it's intrigue, right? And I mean, if Collision kept the same formula, right, but had like one or two matches like that, like, you can still have your fucking Daniel Garcia against Preston Vance or whatever. But if it was, let's take the same Collision as last night, right? But bookended by two matches, opened and closed with a match that had a little bit more importance to it and had a little bit more ambiguity in terms of who the winner would be. Mm. Like, what a show that would be. I tune in for that every week.
Yeah.
I mean, Bryan Danielson and FTR against The Righteous and Lance Archer. Like, they haven't won a match all year. You know, like, what's the threat there? Anytime Matt Sydal is in a match, here's a statistic for you, Joe. Matt Sydal has had 13 matches this year. He's lost everyone.
Mm-mm.
So when you tell me Matt Sydal is in a match, like, okay, you're basically spoiling the result for me.
What did WWE do? Because I haven't watched it in years. I obviously haven't watched Raw for like 8 years at this point, or SmackDown, obviously. But they do good ratings, and people like the show. Do you know? Does anybody know?
Well, one thing
email that, in and tell us, like, what's a typical match on Raw these days? Like, is it a big? Is there doubt to the matches? Is it more of a squad? Like,
I think there's a reliance on tag team matches, which AEW doesn't do. AEW keeps its tag team division full of tag teams and doesn't really do, not strange bedfellows, but like, you know, let's take for example this coming pay-per-view, right? You got your Ospreay match, you got your Moxley match, you got your Anarchy in the Arena, you got your world title match. What WWE would do would say, okay, this week we're doing, mixing all the feuds together, we're doing, our main event is going to be Moxley and Swerve against Roderick Strong and Chris Jericho. Something like that. It's just kind of thrown together, but it had a lot of feuds played into it. And again, you don't necessarily know who the winner is going to be. And you got stars on the show wrestling matches. And one thing that WWE also has is a smaller pool of people who are regularly on the show. So if you're tuning into Raw this week, Joe, you know you're going to have, I don't know the draft splits, so excuse me if I'm actually wrong factually with this, but let's say hypothetically, you're tuning to Raw, you know you're getting your Drew McIntyre, you know you're getting Jey Uso, you know you're getting Gunther, you know you're getting Sami Zayn, you know you're getting Cody, you know you're getting Rhea Ripley, Finn Balor, you know you're getting your 20 core crew, and 75% of those are going to have a match of some kind.
Yeah. Right?
AEW, who's Danielson going to be on Dynamite this week? We know he is because they've announced in advance a match with Satnam Singh. But week to week, you're not getting the same 20 people. And also, the people that they're beating are from like a pool of like 150 people. I think there's like 30 or more people who've had one match this year. And it seems like the people, you never see the same people beaten twice. There's just too big a group of people who potentially can be on these shows.
I think that, and it's fine when it's someone coming in as like a guest star. If it's like one of the Lucha guys or a Japanese guy coming in for a one-off match, that adds a bit of excitement and, oh, okay, a dream match type thing. That's fine. But when it is like suddenly you remember that, what are they called? The Revolution? The reprisal?
Who are you talking about?
The Anarchy, what is it? on the Collision main event, those two guys who think they're Bray Wyatt.
The Righteous,
yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, I thought, I didn't know they were still there. Like, I didn't. Who could, like,
okay. I don't know. Well, here's a question for you, Joe. AEW, televised matches only, right? How many wrestlers do you think have had five or fewer televised matches this year? So we're coming up to the end of May, right? We're in the middle of May.
Yeah.
So that's 5 months. How many wrestlers do you think have appeared on AEW television in matches fewer than five times?
I want to say 60.
The answer is 240. And therein lies the problem. 240 different people. So how there's no consistency in the television in that sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that certainly would not be the case for WWE, right? If you were just to take Raw, or let's say Raw and SmackDown combined, since this file we're looking at basically Collision and Dynamite, how many people would have had, you know, fewer than five matches on TV? Probably like four or something like that. You know, again, you're getting your core cast of characters more or less on a weekly basis. 240 wrestlers have wrestled between one and five matches on TV this year. And actually, here's another question for you. How many wrestlers have wrestled more than 10 matches on TV this year?
It's not that many, because I look at the table.
Yeah, 12? It's like 30. No, about 30 wrestlers. Oh, sorry. I will also clarify that my number for people who've wrestled more than five matches is also not correct, because I was looking at the sum and not the count. The actual number is 2, 4, 2, 1, 10. So we're looking at, it's about 130. So it's still a not inconsequential number. 130 wrestlers who have wrestled five matches or fewer. Anyway, let's actually talk about the shows. I thought Dynamite was pretty good.
One final point on that.
Go ahead.
They're in a contract year. They're currently in exclusive negotiations with Warner Brothers Discovery. Shouldn't every match on Dynamite and Collision be like a main event? Just you've got all these wrestlers, and they've got a lot of name wrestlers who just don't wrestle week to week. Put some big singles matches. Have a fucking, I don't know, in the women's division, you could have a Tony Storm versus someone, or you can have, I don't know, there's got to be better matches. But Young Bucks, have a Young Bucks singles match against someone. Just, why are they not putting the biggest and best matches on now while they're negotiating to try and temporarily lift the ratings? And then obviously after that, you can't do that forever because it burns things out, but a little bit of that now, and then once they sign the contract, then they can put Brian Keith versus Bear Bronson on Collision, and you've got the money, so it's fine.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right with that. We had Brian Keith.
Fucking company, honestly.
We had Brian Keith, Bear Bronson on on Collision, and we had Rouge on Rampage. I mean, come on, we're doing this backwards here. Anyway, Dynamite, I thought, was a good show. We did have Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley against Kyle Fletcher and Jeff Cobb, which to me, in my mind, is a little bit more towards the direction that we want, right? You pretty much would assume Danielson and Moxley are going to win that, but Cobb and Fletcher are at least guys that you hold to a certain level. It wasn't them against the Iron Savages or something, you know? I thought the match was very good. I think Kyle Fletcher is someone that they've got something very potentially good with, and I think they need to give him. See, he would be a perfect example for me of a guy who should be wrestling in that mid card, right? A Kyle Fletcher against why don't you do Kyle Fletcher against Trent and give Trent a win against a guy who's not a geek? Yeah. But Kyle Fletcher doesn't serve that purpose. Kyle Fletcher is the geek for the Bryan Danielson level guys. So they don't get any credibility, unfortunately, from losing the match. But it was quite good. Malakai Black is obviously feuding with Adam Copeland. They're having a steel cage, barbed wire, something or other match at the pay-per-view. They attacked Copeland and they took his wedding ring off, which to me felt like more overthought. Malachi Black. Ooh, the symbolism. Oh, he took off the wedding, but they never actually say what they're doing. It's all illusions and, oh, this truly resembles one's character. Anyway, see ya. They never just say what they're supposed to. Ah, I can't be bothered. I'm too jaded rake to really put any thought into this Malachi Black. Yeah. It's good to see him having a singles match. And actually, Joe, Dynamite next week, exactly what we're talking about. We have Malachi Black one-on-one with Kyle O'Reilly. There you go. More of that, please.
Perfect.
Perfect. Young Bizzles defeated Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal. You'll be surprised to hear. The match itself was actually fun enough, but like, come on. Jack Perry was on commentary and he poured a drink over Tony Schiavone, who was very upset. Hook defeated Sebastian Wolf. This was Dynamite, by the way. This wasn't Rampage you're watching. This was Dynamite.
I wouldn't even put this on Rampage. This should be on. This is AEW Dark.
Rest in peace, AEW Dark.
RIP. Bring that back and Tony can put all the shit matches on there. And then. Anyway, no, we're not going to. I don't moan all day about AEW. It's been okay. It's been all right. It's not bad at the moment. It's just.
Well, I tell you what was good was Jericho and Big Bill came out. Jericho, who in my mind has been rehabilitated with this new I'm the learning tree gimmick.
The Kurt
comes out and waves. I mean, I think we've spoken in the past, Joe, our fondness of the fake babyface character.
Hmm.
And that's what Jericho's doing here for all intents and purposes. It's just
babyface,
He comes out and he's waving and he's doing the finger guns to the fans and going, hey, boo, hey, guy, yeah. And Hook bonked him on the head with the microphone and they bailed. Swerve Strickland, Brian Cage, very enjoyable match. And we had storytelling here, Joe, because you remember when I was going to call him Shane Strickland for some reason. He hasn't been called that in like 3 years. But Swerve attacked Nick Wayne and blasted him on the head with the photograph. Remember, and bloodied him? Well, Nick Wayne returned that favor. Photograph of Swerve and his daughter and whatever. Bopped him over the head with it. Left him in a pool of blood. And we're getting Nick Wayne against Swerve on Dynamite next week. This is why Dynamite is the good shit.
Stuff
matters. Stuff matters on Dynamite. And I don't want to turn into an Eric Bischoff type, right? But Collision is just matches that have no context and no importance to them. And Dynamite, at least, has a setup and a payoff. And although Shane Strickland and Nick Wayne, one might also make the point that that has a clear winner in mind, but the match has context to it. The match makes sense, and I'm sure in the pre or post match something will happen that leads further into developing the storyline for the pay-per-view. So that's what I want to see, you know. I have no problem with storytelling through the match itself, but when if they just did Strickland against your man from the Workhorseman, not JD Drake, the other fella, like, what's that? That's not anything. Timeless Tony Storm defeated the how do you describe the massive potential of Harley Cameron, who I think they got something with Harley Cameron.
You like let me it? Tell you. Okay.
I do. I think she's funny. I think she's better in the ring than I ever anticipated she would be. She got a great look, obviously. And she got the it factor.
Got the it factor. Okay, yeah.
I think so. Tony Storm did, of course, get the win there. And then we had I tell you what, Mercedes Moné's best segment since she joined the company. the TBS title contract signing between Willow Nightingale and Mercedes. Mercedes is just basically full on a heel at this stage. There's not much artifice about it. She gave Willow a big old schlep, and Willow picked her up and gave her a power bomb through the table. Oh, it was great stuff. Nice. Great stuff. And then in the main event, Okada and Dax in again. I would think that that's a match worthy of being a Dynamite main event in my mind.
Yeah.
They had a great little match. Okada blasted him with the Rainmaker, and then the Elite came down for the beat up, or they came down for the beat down, excuse me. And then Danielson and FTR were, as they were being beaten down, Darby Allin's music played, and he returned as the fourth man of Team AW. So big thumbs up on that match. The match was great, and so was the post match. So I'll be very, even though, yeah, Joe, look, we've been very down here and very, moany and complainy, but I thought Dynamite was very good.
I watched it this week. I just didn't get around to it, but it looks good. It looks all right.
I think our issue is not necessarily with AEW, but specifically with the framing of Collision, as like, give us something on Collision that is has some meat on the bones. Do you know what I mean?
I've never been happy since Collision launched, because I always just thought going to 5 hours was just going to be too much. For me specifically, I want to watch 2 hours a week and maybe a Rampage if it's good. Like, that's what I want. Yeah. And when Collision launched, I was like, this is why they needed CM Punk back for that show, because without someone like that on it to make it different or to have a star presence on it, it was just going to become like another 2 hours of Rampage. And that's...
I do like Collision. I just want Collision to be better. I mean, because the thing with Collision is, as you know, I stay up and watch Collision live every week.
Oh, you're a collider.
Yes, I can. Because the thing with Dynamite, as good as it is and with how much I've enjoyed it, is it's not live. And watching it live will always, to me, have an extra little special sprinkle of anything can happen-ness to it. Mm-hmm. But then the only thing with Collision is, as I say, like, what was on this... We'll talk about Collision now, but, like, what was on this Collision show that really, like, mattered? Right? In a sense?
Yeah.
Will Ospreay, Shane Taylor... I'll tell you what mattered. Will Ospreay hit Shane Taylor with the Stormbreaker, which was a hell of a visual.
Yeah.
And the match was good, but again, like, I don't feel coming out of this segment like... Okay, let's just talk about a concept that I learned through work, and I'm sure something similar exists in your workplace, Joe, which is that whenever I create a slideshow presentation, right, the idea is that each slide has one idea to it,
yeah,
and is one step forward in the story, right? Yeah. So that the slide itself is not complicated with multiple ideas. But there's a key information in it, and then you move to the following slide, and the story progresses one slide forward. Will Ospreay, Shane Taylor had a very good match here, but what was the step forward in the storyline here? You know, narratively, I feel like we ended the segment at the same place as we started it.
There's not a lot of progression week to week, and I think. Again, this is what was just said. The problem is with Dynamite or with Collision a lot of the time is I don't feel like I need to tune in each week to see, oh, what happened based off of what happened last week. And I think that's to your point on a smaller scale, match to match or segment to segment, that doesn't happen.
I'll tell you what I would have done here. And it's only a small thing, but I think it would have had importance to it, is Roderick Strong and the Kingdom are out there, along with big Wardlow. Ospreay hits his big move on Wardlow. Because what you get then is Ospreay looks strong. He hits his big move on a big guy, in addition to hitting on Shane Taylor. Roderick Strong is now, you know, the story of the match is Roderick Strong is fearing the move because he's seen Ospreay hit it on Shane Taylor and Wardlow, two hulking behemoths. And And then that potentially leads in the future to an Ospreay-Wardlaw match. You know?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily something important for today, but it's something. And you can refer back to it later. And, you know, ultimately what they had here was Ospreay had a match with Shane Taylor. Roderick Strong was on, like, commentary. Ospreay won, and then they tried to jump him, and Ospreay like, ran away.
Yeah.
We had a few backstage seggies with Moxley and Castagnoli. They're doing Moxley Takeshita at the pay-per-view, which is, ooh, baby, let me have a little taste of that. What else? Hook defeated Johnny TV. Shibata defeated Rocky Romero. Brian Keith defeated Boulder. Let me tell you about this Brian Keith Boulder match. So I'm no fan of these Boulder boys.
I like the who is that man? I don't know who he is. The one who did the promo.
That's Jack Jameson.
Right. Never heard of him before.
Okay. Well, he's their hype man.
Well, yeah. Well, I got that. What was the what's the tagline? Something about they love showing titties or something. I can't remember. But it,
yeah.
It's better than what they had before, which was like the eating ass. What was it?
Eating
ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was an improvement on that.
Well, small. This match included Brian Keith like sucking on Boulder's nipple and Nigel McGuinness going, oh, did he get milk out of it?
This is unbelievable.
These guys, I know they're MJF's guys or whatever, but these Boulder lads are need to go.
Yeah.
Especially this guy. I don't mind the other fella. The other guy Bronson. The other guy Bronson looks like a wrestler, right?
Yeah.
I know we've made this point before, so apologies to listeners who go, oh, here we go. This guy just doesn't look threatening. He's just a big guy with like a baby face.
Yeah.
Do you remember the point we talked about in the quiz last week where someone, I already forget the answer to it, but someone had said that like Braun Strowman looks like Eugene.
Yes.
Boulder has the same thing. He doesn't have a threatening look. He just looks like a blown up like baby. And then his gimmick is like he gets like, oh, he rubs his titties on you. Alright, and no. I'm tapping out on Boulder. And I won't make this point ever again. These guys stink. I'm just gonna say it once and for all, these guys are no hopers.
Paul wants to fight you. And so if you're up for it.
No, because I'm sure he probably is a big old tough bloke, but
I doubt it. I reckon I could beat him up.
But in the world of wrestling, actually being a tough bloke is not important.
Anyway. That's true.
Orange Cassidy defeated Isaiah Cassidy in the Battle of the Cassidies. Again, Kel Surprise, Orange Cassidy beat him. Serena Deeb defeated Anna Jay. You might argue that match, at least Serena Deeb and Anna Jay aren't a million miles apart. But again, Serena Deeb's going for the title. Anna Jay is someone they throw in to lose every week. Yeah. I didn't quite understand what the point of the end of the match was here. So maybe you can illuminate for me, Joe. Tony Storm came out and they stood behind Serena Deeb's big flag.
Yeah.
And Tony Storm took all her clothes off and wrapped herself in the flag. And then Serena Deeb came up the ramp and Tony Storm suddenly was afraid and ran away.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I thought this was to do with something that happened that I hadn't seen, but I don't. If you don't know, then I don't really have much.
It was as if they did the gimmick where like Tony Storm's bag got stolen backstage and she's running around in a towel. Except yeah. She came out and undressed and put the flag on and then ran away. I didn't get it. Nick Wayne beat Jack Hartwell, and then the main event was like fine.
Jack Cartwheel. I like he did do a cartwheel though. That was good. It's sort of like, you know, a lot of people have these gimmick names and they don't actually do the gimmick.
Like who?
like the Boulder Bronson doesn't do anything involving boulders.
He's not a boulder at all.
When has he ever done anything with like a boulder?
Big Bill, he's only 5'4".
You know what I mean? But you get these people and it's like, oh, my name's Hard Man, whatever. Or like Brian Keith, the bounty hunter. I've never seen him
collect a bounty.
I don't see him hunt or collect a bounty.
That's true. That is, you know, true. What I mean?
Like, that should be like the first thing you do. Video package.
That would be not bad if, like, who would want, like, Roderick Strong goes into the dressing room, Brian Keith is in there smoking a cigar, and he says, Brian, I want you to take out this Osprey guy. And he puts a big, fat, padded envelope. And then you have a Brian Keith Osprey match. Like, wait a minute. That would be good if they did it that way.
Like the APA. That used to work. People used to pay them to take people out, and it was like,
we're properly getting into Eric Bischoff territory now, where it's like, the characters are more important than the matches. But I feel like a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B would go a long way there. Because that match would also be very good if there was some setup to it, and you understood, again, storyline-wise, contextually-wise, that would be good. Anyway. And then we got Double or Nothing, but I guess actually Double or Nothing next week, we'll actually have a chance to preview it properly next week.
Yeah.
So we'll hold off for that. Movies, Joe. Again, this is like the third or fourth week in a row. We have both watched the same movie. And very excitingly for me, we don't feel the same way about it. Ooh. So I'm excited to get a good little healthy debate going. So, Joe, tell me about Love Lies Bleeding.
So Love Lies Bleeding is a new movie set in the late 80s, starring Christian Stewart, Ed Harris, isn't it? And there's another lady, I think her name's
Katie O'Brien,
who plays a kind of competitive bodybuilder. It's very WBF, like, you know, Vince. I can imagine Vince promoting that show.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Oh, my God. Wow, Jackie Cleaver. it's a crime thriller, is how I describe it. A kind of crime.
It is.
Erotic crime thriller. It's not that erotic, but more erotic than Challengers, certainly. So this bodybuilder character arrives in this small town, goes to a gym that's run by Christian Stewart. And from there, they form a relationship. And then there's lots of other kind of crazy shit happens. Directed by a lady called Rose Glass, who's a British director, I haven't seen the previous movie, Saint Maud. Is that one that you've seen?
I have. It's very good.
Very good film. Okay.
Very good.
I haven't seen that, but I'm eager to check that out. Having seen this one. So it's a very kind of stylized movie. Like it's very kind of 80s and it leans heavily into that sort of look. The music and everything, the clanging and there's a lot of clanging and banging and kind of like, you know, 80s and guns and all kinds of stuff. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I liked the central relationship between the two women at the heart of it. I just dug that kind of the feel of it more so. I think the
vibe,
the vibes were on. In terms of the actual story and the way that unfolds. It's not like a very kind of, I want to say, like cleverly plotted movie. It's not sort of an intricate where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this or that. It unfolds in a fairly kind of broad way, almost kind of fairy tale like. I think it's how Michelle described it, where, you know, these two characters in this kind of kingdom hiding from the evil king sort of thing. And then
I can see that.
Each other. Yeah. So that's kind of what I liked about it. And I just, the music, the feel of it. And, nice to see two lesbian characters played by actual lesbians as well. I mean, we talked about the the implied homoeroticism of challengers here, it is very much on the sleeve.
So it satisfies your Jack Cartwheel rule.
Yes, it does. Why didn't you like it?
I don't want to come off too harsh here because I didn't hate the movie at all. I just felt more disappointed by it and underwhelmed, I guess. I did see St. Maud, and I maybe I'm underplaying earlier how much I enjoyed St. Maud. I thought St. Maud was great.
Yeah.
And I think I might have even gone as high as a 9 on St. Maud on the letterbox.com. I don't remember. It's a while since I watched it. But I was very impressed by it. I never felt like I truly connected with Love Lies Bleeding. I guess I was hoping for it to almost be more stylized than it was. I feel like aside from the bodybuilding angle, which again doesn't, I don't want to say it's underplayed because I don't think it is, but it also doesn't really tie enough into the plot for me. Like it feels like something just to the side, like a little bit of side table dressing. Whereas the plot, the central plot of the movie doesn't really have anything to do with bodybuilding. One of the characters just kind of happens to be a bodybuilder. And there's some surrealism towards the end that a lot of people I've spoken to hated. I kind of enjoyed it because at least it was like different and stood out. The plot itself, I found it just kind of like a run-of-the-mill, more of a run-of-the-mill crime drama than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, when you let's hypothetically, right, in a year's time, when you think of this movie, you're going to remember the bodybuilding and you're going to remember the ending. Because the rest of the actual plot and the meat and potatoes of the movie, I just found kind of more run of the mill than I expected it to be. I wasn't particularly interested in the Ed Harris character and the Kristen Stewart and their family. Like that stuff just all felt very like surface level to me. I didn't really care about it. And although I liked the Katie O'Brien character and liked the Kristen Stewart character, I thought the performances were good. I didn't feel like 100% chemistry between them. Despite the performances being good, I didn't totally buy into that relationship. But I think like, as I said, the core story of the movie is where most of my problems lay. Like I liked, as you said, the 80s vibe of it, the music of it. I thought it was a good looking movie. Mm-hmm. I liked the ending, which a lot of people didn't, that I've spoken to at least. And I like the bodybuilding angle. And if anything, I wish they pushed more into it because the stuff they do in that sphere is like, to me, the most interesting stuff in the movie. But it was just like the Dave Franco character and his wife and the like abuse thing. And then they get caught up in the crime of the family. And then like that stuff was just like, I'm not going to remember any of that. That's just your typical, I don't know. I would struggle to differentiate any of that stuff from a movie like The Drop or Hell or High Water or any number of those kind of dingy American family crime deals. I just wish that the film was, I almost wish it was like weirder than it is. If that makes sense.
I understand what you mean about the focus on the kind of relationship and the bodybuilding, because that was the more interesting part. I think the Ed Harris character, I do like his performance, and he looks so,
out of Bo Selector or something. And I liked that. I liked how he looked because it was weird.
That's what I mean. There's a man with a genuine face, like no, absolutely no facelifts going on there. And that's all for the better because he does look very odd with this kind of weird hair. So I liked that. But yeah, I tend to agree. I think this, I went 4 stars on it rather than a big 5. And that is on the strength of the feeling of it and the vibes of it.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel you could have stripped out a lot of that family stuff and focused more on the relationship and the bodybuilding. And it would have been just as good. It does kind of, central to it is the idea of like roid rage. But they don't really go into that. It's kind of just a bit of an afterthought. So I would have liked to see more than that. But
you could read into the ending that it kind of leads into that a little bit in a surrealist way. But yeah, I kind of wish that it had. I know it's not a horror movie, and her previous movie, Saint Maud, kind of is more a horror movie. But I almost wish that it had some horror elements to it. It almost does. There's some kind of very light body horror stuff, but. I kind of wish it got a little bit more fucked up towards the end than it does.
Being critical as well, like the Ed Harris character does look very weird. He doesn't come across as very threatening throughout the movie as well until maybe later on. He seems quite nice or quite, I don't know, kind of quietly menacing. Like you get that he's probably a piece of shit, but he's not established as like a real like threat in the movie. The threat is more like, for me, the relationship blowing up, like that's the kind of the villain of the movie, is like the turmoil of the relationship rather than him. I think purely on how good I enjoyed the vibes, that's the 4 stars for me. Kind of over.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I know not to spoil it for next week, but I know Barry also went the 4 on it. So I will be the lone wolf on it. I also didn't really like how they wrote the Kristen Stewart Ed Harris father daughter relationship. Like towards the end of the movie, she's like, "Dad, I'm nothing like you," and she was like almost like an annoying teenager the way she was written. And then there was like some kind of obvious. She says she's nothing like her father, but then look what she's doing. She's exactly like him.
We're not so different, you and I.
Yeah, I was like, I've seen this done better elsewhere. No, like I say, look, I don't want to come off like we are with AEW. I don't want to come off super, super negative because I thought there was a lot in the movie that I thought was interesting and that did work for me. I just wish that the kind of central story was a little bit more interesting than it is.
Yeah.
And also the world feels very small. It's ostensibly this crime family and Ed Harris is doing whatever he's doing, but it's really only these like 5 characters and nothing really exists outside of that.
Sure.
Which isn't necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. It's just, it felt like there wasn't a lot going on. That's all I've watched, Joe. What else have you watched anyway?
Fair enough. Also watched The Idea of You on Amazon Prime, which is a new rom-com with Anne Hathaway and this young boy called Nicholas Galitzini, who's English. So it's kind of potentially inspired by the Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde relationship, because it's about a kind of old woman who meets a young guy from a boy band. I think he's supposed to be 25-ish. She's kind of late 30s, 40, divorced, and she goes to a concert, accidentally meets him, and then they have this kind of May to December romance. So it's a rom-com, and I thought it was sort of well done to a degree. It was very watchable, and Anne Hathaway is just very good. It's a shame, I think, following like Devil Wears Prada and a few of the things she did after that, oftentimes some actresses kind of struggle just to get those good roles. She's so engaging as an actress and a real star. Like I think whatever she's in, she just takes it to a higher level.
I would agree. Yeah,
and she certainly does in this movie, because I think the rest of it is fairly kind of paint by numbers. And the main guy, he does a good, he's a decent job. He's believable as that kind of pop star. Like he's charming. He has some charisma, but again, I never really was like rooting for them to get together. Not too much more to say about it. It's decent, probably ultimately not one you're going to sort of want to go back to. It lacks a kind of any sort of spark or differentiation that would make it something to watch again. But it was okay.
I would say if you're in the market for a really good Anne Hathaway performance, I don't know if it's going to be on any streaming services or anything, but Eileen from last year, she's very good.
Yeah. After that, I also caught up with Late Night with the Devil. that you have very so I did subscribe to Shudder to get hold of that. And
okay.
Get my 1 week free trial of Shudder, which I need to cancel actually. I forget that. So yes, I was very excited about the premise of this movie. So the idea of it's not really found footage, but it's a little bit like mockumentary kind of found footage style of like, here's a copy of a late night talk show from the 70s where there was a, you know, satanic incantation and something went wrong. So I like that idea, but then I think actually watching it, it doesn't really fully commit to that. It, first of all, it has these kind of cutaways in black and white that aren't part of the broadcast. They're us, you know, they're watching the characters backstage. And then towards the end, I think it also gets, you know, the ending is very surreal and also not particularly ambiguous. Like it basically tells you what's going on. That's what I didn't like for me. I was hoping for something with a bit more sort of naturalism and a bit more ambiguity. That's kind of what I was expecting. It didn't give that, which, you know, if you weren't expecting that, maybe you enjoyed it more, but I think that's what I would have liked to get from it. And it didn't do that. Maybe it, I don't know if that was just a creative choice or maybe they didn't want to go fully that way with it, but you know, the first thing I thought was to describe it was, you know, Inside Number 9 does Ghostwatch. Like that's to me is how I was saying it reminded me of an episode of Inside Number 9, except I think they would have done it with a bit more panache in some ways.
Yeah, I think you, me, and Barry are all kind of aligned on how we feel about that one. Have you watched the Half in the Bag review?
Yeah, I did. They were, I think, along the same lines.
Yeah, I think we all think the same about that movie pretty much. It's decent, but I would totally agree on, especially the ending. If they really stuck to the found footage and all this stuff happens, and then it just ends almost in a similar way to like Blair Witch, where there's no explanation given. It's just, and that's what happened. That's why that's so effective and why that's so scary.
Yeah, exactly. And making it more ambiguous as to whether like the girl was really possessed, you know, like having something happen, but maybe the camera gets knocked over and you kind of see half of it happening. You're like, oh, fuck, is this real? Is this more kind of fakery? But it's pretty, you know, she makes a man sort of boil from the inside and die. So it's pretty obvious that, yes, she must be possessed by something.
Her head turns into a rainbow split head.
Yes. So that wasn't for me, but you know, some people have really enjoyed it. Wasn't quite what I wanted, but a worthy kind of watch, because I think it was at least an interesting sort of attempt to do something. And I like the style of it. And that kind of, there was something very sinister about those kind of 70s talk shows of these very paternalistic men and these odd guests they would have on. Just something quite a bit strange about it. I like that. Right. So yeah, that's the old.
The old movies.
So how are you going on the TV front?
Yeah, so speaking of Half in the Bag, I've started rewatching every episode from the beginning.
Episode what? What was episode one?
Drive Angry 3D and the Adjustment Bureau.
Jesus. That's
something. Yeah. All the way back in 2011, I think. Luckily, someone has, I mean, they have their own playlist on their YouTube channel. However, it's in reverse chronological order. So someone was nice enough to put together an actual chronological version. So, so I watched the first like four episodes. I don't know. It's just nice to revisit those old ones, because a lot of them I've since seen the movie they talked about. So it'll be interesting for me to revisit and actually hear about some of these movies. And then in actual TV land, I did finish season 6 of Inside Number 9, which you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I've started season 7. Still very enjoyable. I liked season 7. I don't know if it's the opening episode. Have I watched the second one yet? The one where they're on the boat in the lake. Yeah, very enjoyable. I feel like since I've dived back into Inside Number 9, I've more or less enjoyed every episode. Mm. I wonder if I'm kind of, my enjoyment is buoyed a bit by the fact that I took such a long break. Like, it's been 4 years since I watched up to season five, and then I've jumped back into it, and it's all like completely fresh and new to me, as opposed to watching it every year as it airs. But no, very, very good. I liked the Last Night at the Proms, which I think was the season six finale, which I thought was good. And so hopefully I'll be caught up by the time season nine finishes. But I have like another 10 episodes or so to watch before I'm on season nine. So it's not too much. Luckily the episodes are short enough, digestible enough that you can quickly stick one on, and in half an hour you're on to the next one. Yeah. Great little show. I'm very happy you put me onto it, because I enjoy it quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
And also, go ahead.
So yeah. So
that's it. I did find season six though, and kind of season seven, the Reese Shearsmith character often is like, and I don't know if this is more so than in the previous seasons, but something I've noticed watching season six, he like in season six, in the first episode of season seven, he almost only plays like repressed gay characters or like weird outcast characters.
Well,
I don't know if that continues through like season eight and nine.
Well, the most recent episode, absolutely. The first of the season, probably not. But yeah, I think, well, you know, play what you're good at.
Stick to, I guess, strength. So. Maybe camp is the better word for it. But like in the episode with Derek Jacobi, he was like a gay
right.
Assistant, what was he like a healthcare hospice assistant,
or whatever. Yeah,
and then you have the one on the lake where he's like a weirdo who can't let go of his like university days and invites his like friends from university out to the lake.
He never plays the kind of chummy.
He never plays like the straight character.
He's never the everyman, is he? He's like the
everyman. That's what I'm getting at. The straight in the sense of not like straight or gay, but the straight man in Pemberton usually will play that role, which is I just noticed it. And then I've finished season three of X-Men as well. I'm on season four now, so I'm making my way through that too. And then in terms of music, Billie Eilish has a new record out. Joe, you might be interested to hear.
Right.
I don't know if you listen to much Eilish yourself, I haven't completed that. I've only listened to the first like 25 minutes of what is a 43 minute album, but I'm very impressed. I think when it's all said and done, it'll be the best album I'll have listened to this year so far. Reminds me a lot of that Wolf Alice album from a few years ago, which I really, really enjoyed. So, so far, so good. I'll finish listening to it over the next few days, but I will give it a preemptive recommendation of what I've listened so far. It's great. It's excellent. So recommend.
Thank you for that,
and tell us about your trip.
We were out today to see a little bit of ballet. Very cultural.
Ballet. That's the little bear in the car, isn't it?
Yeah. And the lesbians. I never been to the ballet before, so I was intrigued. Yeah. I knew it sort of involved dance. I mean, I've seen Billy Elliot. I kind of knew what was involved. But it was an adaptation of A Streetcar Named Desire, a play and film I've also never seen. So all of my knowledge really comes from
The Simpsons.
The Simpsons, yes.
Can't you hear me yell?
Stella. And then Flanders with his shirt off. So that thing with the ballet is, right, obviously it's just dancing and music. There's no dialogue. There's no narration. So I didn't really know what was going on a lot of the time. But it was still very enjoyable. You know, I tried to just look at it as like, you don't have to understand the plot intricately. You're just kind of following the emotion of the dance and of the
yeah, it's like it's AEW Collision. It's storytelling through the match.
It's very much, I was thinking, yes, wrestling. If you had to compare wrestling to another art form, I think ballet would be the closest, even though, of course,
why did they say it's not ballet the whole time?
JR once said, this ain't ballet. Well, yeah. Joe Towner says, it's 2024, this is ballet. Because it's just a purely physical form of storytelling. You're not explaining, you're just telling it with physicality. Obviously, in wrestling, it's a bit simpler because it's just one man is winning or one woman is winning, one is losing, and then they beat up the other one and someone wins.
Yeah.
So it's a bit easier to understand. But yeah, I did enjoy it, and they had some very kind of interesting, like, you know, the staging and the direction of it was really cool. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a tight 1 hour and 40 minutes with a 20-minute interval as well, so that was nice. Yeah, I'd probably go and see another ballet, but I think I'd probably read the story first next time. So I
okay, or watch the movie.
Just watch the movie, yeah, watch the movie first so I knew what was happening. But yeah, I'd recommend that. It makes you a bit different. So that brings us to the end of
the show. So let's get our plugs in, which we never do.
Do the plugs. Oh, come
on. Chairshotpodcast.com. That's where you can send us an email using the email form, but also feel free to send your email to chairshotpodcast@gmail.com if you've got your email open. That's probably easier, right? chairshotpodcast@gmail.com, or if you've got your web browser open, just jump over to chairshotpodcast.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and we've got a lovely little email form, and that does it all automatically. That you don't even need to put in the address. Great stuff. You can also on there check out our AW Fantasy League updated as of last night's Rampage and Collision. And also you can download all the old episodes and everything from there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Paul Griffin CSP. Joe is in and out of Twitter, but at Griff Tannen. Barry's at the Barry Lad, and we're at Chair Shot Pod on Twitter as well. And if you want to give me money, just, I don't know, I'll give you my PayPal details if you want to shoot me a Twitter.
Check in the post. So,
yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will see you again next week with Barry probably back in tow. But that just leaves me to say thank you and goodbye from me and goodbye from Paul.
Goodbye.